This podcast may contain adult language and themes, or it might not. We're not really sure. We haven't recorded it yet.
I'm Jason.
I'm Diggs.
I make software, music, and podcasts.
I connect people, personally and professionally, and I like talking with Jason.
This is the Candy Factory 5x5 podcast.
Five conversations.
Five random topics.
5 minutes each.
When we hear this sound,
we move on to the next topic. Next.
On every episode, we invite a very special guest to join us.
Hi, my name is Jocelyn Park. I am the founder of Lancaster Transplant, the community manager at Startup Harrisburg, co-working space based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And I'm a cat mom.
Wow. I didn't expect that one to slide in there.
I was going to bring it up if she didn't, so.
And my good friend Diggs has some connection with at least one of those things, not the cat.
I like the cat, but yeah, it's not. We co-work on Lancaster Transplant together. I shouldn't have said co-work, but we work together as on the leadership team for Lancaster Transplant.
Right, so welcome.
Thank you.
It's so great to have you here.
It's really nice to be here. I love seeing both of your faces.
And we love seeing your face.
It's good to be seen.
Right?
So we are going to roll into our episode of 5x5. We're going to present five random topics. We're going to talk about those for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to see where this conversation goes. I'm going to start episode number 3.
Ooh.
And our first topic for 5x5 is hummus.
Oh my God, I Ooh. Love hummus.
Do you?
I love hummus. Yeah.
Hummus is a thing that when I was a kid, I was thinking about this not long ago. Actually, it's kind of interesting that this came up. Hummus was introduced into my world very late. In other words, when I was a kid, hummus wasn't a thing.
Right.
You didn't go to a party and, you know what I mean? We had potato chips, and if you were lucky, you had like French onion dip. And it usually came in a big tub of something. Yeah, right?
Not even like Tostitos and salsa?
It wasn't... Salsa? Funny you bring up salsa.
Oh.
Because wow. It was like the 80s. Now remember, I'm a little bit
older than us.
I'm a seasoned citizen.
Ooh, that's good.
So in the 80s, when I was a teenager, I remember like hearing about salsa for the first time.
Oh.
So this wasn't like one of these things like, you know, that I always knew as a kid. Like this wasn't a snack that was around.
Mm.
And now I came from a very small town in Western Pennsylvania. So it's very, very possible that the rest of the world knew about salsa and hummus in 1978. But when in 1978, when I was like, I guess 7, and my parents had parties,
yeah,
there was no hummus and salsa.
Hummus is somebody always brings a hummus to a party.
Hummus is the thing now. It's a staple.
It is a staple
it's
of every
you.
Single party. Yeah, I do because I like hummus. I don't remember when I was introduced to hummus. It could have been college. I don't know.
Mm. I feel like hummus became a kind of a hot thing in the late 90s. I feel like that it's maybe even early 2000s.
Actually, I feel like my first introduction was when I moved to Lancaster to real hummus, to like homemade hummus.
Oh.
Well, oh, like artisanal craft hummus?
It was just made in the food process, but like tahini, didn't know what any of the ingredients are. My roommate, Janae, she used to make hummus. I think that's really, and then I liked hummus.
Mm.
And then I always pick hummus because I need a protein and I like dipping things. And sometimes I get away with eating pita chips.
Right.
Or carrots.
Or carrots and cucumbers. I like all those things that you dip, except red peppers. I hate red peppers.
Well, get green peppers.
I do like green peppers.
There you go.
Yeah. Are you a Sabra?
Well,
Sabra
see,
hummus person?
Ooh.
I've tried a lot of hummuses. I mean, the Tribe ones, all right. So it's whatever's on sale at the grocery store.
No doubt.
Right?
That is totally like, an on-sale product.
Right? It's always two for like $5 or
yes.
whatever it is at Giant and... Yeah.
It's funny how there are products that are like, I'm brand loyal. Like, no matter what, I'm brand loyal. And then there are products that's like, whatever the cheapest one is, I'm there.
Hummus is totally
and hummus
like that.
Hummus is totally a sale product.
Well, you know, they started making hummus they had like edamame hummus, yellow lentil hummus, black bean hummus. They have that all at the grocery store too.
Good grief.
Where are you at on hummus?
I love it. I don't go out of my way to buy it though, because usually,
because when you hang out with Jocelyn,
I know it'll be there.
Because I always bring the hummus.
But I will say, I got ruined a little bit. I hate to do that, like the story by Diggs.
Bringing it down.
But no, it's not bringing it down. So there was a point I was in Egypt for five weeks doing a language immersion when I was taking Arabic. And there was this hummus that we had there that kind of ruined me for hummus for like a good year. It was just so fresh and so good. And I being from New York, I like went to every Egyptian place that I could find when I was home in the summer to try to find the same hummus. I don't know what it was. It was like creamy and chunky at the same time. Oh, if only we could import Egyptian hummus.
So what I'm hearing is that you are a hummus purist.
I was.
Jocelyn and I will take the $2 hummus any day.
Yeah, that sounds pretty bad now that I think of it.
No, I can dumb myself down to the $2 hummus. No,
and you're from New York City, so hummus had to be there forever. The hummus is not a new thing. Western Pennsylvania, it takes a while for things to kind of move across the state.
Because people don't want to pay to take the turnpike. That's the problem. So
that's absolutely right.
It's expensive.
But it's definitely something that I don't, you know, that I feel like just came about, became introduced, and now is... like rock prolific. Solid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's prolific. Yeah. What do you think about the fancy like flavored hummuses that are out now? Like, I think they've gone too far.
Well, I have certain kind. I just bought two yesterday. Tapenade and pine nut.
Oh boy.
I know. Yeah. So I'll try. I know. I mean, I like garlic hummus. If I had one hummus and I could only just garlic.
Yeah, garlic.
And I think classic I'd take
regular.
Hummus.
Yeah. Regular old plain hummus for me.
Plain hummus, garlic hummus, and I will go to roasted red pepper. It's been a long time, and I've had roasted red pepper for a long time, but when they start mixing it up, it's sort of like jelly beans.
Everything hummus is pretty good. I mean, all they do is put everything bagel toppings on hummus.
No, I haven't had that.
But it's delicious. No.
But wait, so will you do red pepper hummus?
No.
Really? I thought you bought that once. Okay. I misremembered.
I might have, but...
It was an accident.
I'm doing the red pepper hummus.
I'm fine.
If we have to buy a 2-pack, I'm taking the red pepper hummus. Topic number 2, automatic or stick?
Oh, okay.
Mm.
This was probably me. So my opinion is that stick is, it's not useless, but it's just, what's the point? Like, and maybe this is from growing up in New York and like,
oh yeah.
And my dad drives stick and I can if I need to, but it's just, why worry about one other thing and then there's another? You have to worry about the clutch if you like burn it out. I just keep it.
Well, you know, before cell phones,
there was a time I vaguely remember it, but yes,
before cell phones, I think people liked to stay busy when they were driving.
Mm.
I remember people making okay. So I'm gonna chime in here by saying that I kind of agree with you. I feel like it's overrated.
Mm.
I didn't grow up on a stick. Like people who grow up driving stick.
I feel like they stay with stick, right?
And yes. and it becomes a thing.
It's like CrossFit.
It's a little bit like CrossFit.
Who
in
grows
some,
up with CrossFit? In,
no. They didn't grow up with it. It's just that when you become a CrossFit, it's all you talk about. If you're a stick driver, it's all you talk about.
Raised with
okay. Because I'm agreeing with you that it's like CrossFit in no way that I understand.
Fair.
But I feel like that when you grow up with driving stick, like you become a purist.
Yeah.
Sort of like you are with hummus. It's like... there people are almost offended that you wouldn't agree with them.
Right. It's like you've committed a like mass murder by saying you drive an automatic.
But I remember back in the day when I was first driving and a lot of guys where I was from, again, small town in Western Pennsylvania, were you know, car guys.
Mm.
They were the guys who had two cars that they were rebuilding in their backyard, right? And so it was a very important thing to them to drive stick shift. And these cars were like more... pure cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one guy saying to me specifically, like, it gives me something to do, like, while I'm driving.
Mm.
Clearly, that wouldn't be the case now because he'd be texting or
right.
whatever. Yeah.
Social media-ing.
Probably.
While driving.
Like,
but,
like.
Like, because who could do that now? Who could text and drive a stick at the
I'm
same
sure
time?
I'm sure there are people who
oh,
do.
Oh, yeah, sure.
People are idiots.
Where are you at with it?
I feel like I've lost out or, like, missed something. Because I've never...
By not driving stick.
Yeah, because I feel like it's some sort of... For a while, at least, I felt like everyone who did, you know, growing up, anyone who did drive stick was like way cooler about it. You know, they did love it, but it was also like so complicated and I never really understood it. And I did have somebody, a friend teach me. I think I drove down a road once with stick, but I've always been automatic. I don't think I have the attention span to. I want to pay attention while I'm driving. Yeah. And I can't multitask very well like that.
Well, also we've lost the big thing was, well, you can be more efficient with stick, which was fair. Like,
which was, yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
But now that most automakers are switching to CVT or continuously variable transmissions, which is essentially just a cone where the gearing runs along. So there's no like physical 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh my God, where are you going with this?
I know.
It's because, there's a point. There's a point to this.
All right.
It's that the because it's a cone, it's more efficient because it finds the optimal power band. So the benefit.
Dix is really smart. You know?
He is. He knows a lot about engines and trains and certain things. Well,
something.
So what I don't understand is why they sell automatic cars with like the paddles you can shift into manual. Like my first car, my Mazda, I liked. I thought it was cool. I would do it every once in a while. But then they changed to like paddles on the thing. It just I never used them. So I'm like, why?
Well, I had my first car also had that. I had an 02 Passat. And I used it when I was passing because it was slow to kick down. It was just a tiny, it just wasn't quick enough for me. So I would put it in Tiptronic and just to put it down a gear so I could pass a truck or whatever it was. Why automatics or CVTs, because they technically are two different things, have paddle shifters now? Like my car is a CVT and has paddle shifters. I don't think I'm ever going to use them. It's just to make you feel cool, I guess. I'm not really sure.
I don't know that I've ever seen a paddle shifter.
Oh, really?
And if I did, I wouldn't know what it was, and I probably wouldn't. I could have that car for 10 years, and I'd be like, I didn't realize there was a paddle shifter in there.
Well, isn't that what cars are becoming? Like, you have, like, basically things. They're becoming too smart, and, like, there's, like, too many buttons and things.
But everything still breaks, though.
That's
and
so
like
true.
The computer chips now it's just and every we all know technology breaks and it has bugs and all and it happens with the cars.
So do we think we're going to end up back in stick shifts at the end?
I don't know. But I will say that back in the 90s, I worked at an auto auction in Nashville for a little bit, and I had to drive a stick, and I never had. And I feel bad now looking back at the people who bought the cars that I had driven at the auto auction
because probably burned out the clutch before they got it.
It wasn't. But, that didn't turn out well.
But they were sold, right?
They were definitely sold. Cool. Topic number three for this episode is 5x5 coming at you right now. Bill Cosby.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah.
Bill Cosby.
I just want to say I have no relationship to Bill Cosby because I have never watched The Cosby Show.
Never.
I don't think I've ever watched an episode. I don't know if I was too young or just like it wasn't on TV at the times that I was watching, but I don't have like that childhood sort of like so
not even the Jell-O commercial.
Oh, I hate Jell-O, so it just freaked me out.
You just shut that
I just shut it all out. I just know him, you know, culturally. I think
Cosby for me was Fat Albert was a big deal.
Fat Albert,
I mean, that's, you know, my first memories of him were Fat Albert when I was a kid, probably the late 70s. And then, of course, the, you know, being a teenager, middle school in around 1984, when The Cosby Show came out and took off. I mean, it was big, right? It was like the show. And we, it's, you know, sort of, I mean, that was the show you just kind of went to. And I really, it was interesting, kind of understanding him as, you know, he was always this, not just an iconic figure in television and entertainment, sort of like that, but the sort of moral, you know what I mean, leadership that he, I guess, portrayed, I don't know, through even the 90s.
Yeah.
That's, he really became that sort of voice of, like, morality.
Yeah.
And then to find out what was going on is just, it was pretty devastating.
And I suppose for me, I think there's sort of three parts to who he is. And this is how I break it down. I'm not saying anybody else needs to break it down the way that I break it down. But there was the stand-up comic.
Right.
And at the risk of potentially offending someone for saying that this is still probably one of my favorite skits, but Chocolate Cake for Breakfast still makes me laugh. I even though I know that what he did was terrible, if it comes on or someone just happens to say Dad is great for some reason, if you don't know the skit, that's part of, there's a song that his kids apparently sing to him where part of it is Dad is great, he gives us chocolate cake. that still makes me laugh. Do I feel bad about it? Yeah, I do. But I can't separate. I can separate for like half a second. Like, oh yeah, chocolate cake for breakfast was really funny.
Right.
He was also a terrible human being that deserves what he gets. That other piece that I didn't really mention or talk about was the show.
Right.
The fact that he was an actor, which the most of his acting kind of flew by me, but the Cosby Show was big in reruns for me because, you know, I'm the 28-year-old.
A little bit younger.
Yeah. Even the new, the second version of the Cosby Show was in reruns for me. Like, I didn't see it live, even though it was on while I was alive, like,
yeah,
after
right,
I was
right.
alive. But they both were just big reruns things.
Yeah,
for
they
me.
Were syndicated shows. There was yeah. And they were so just huge.
Yeah.
Shows for television.
Yeah.
And what's the third? The third, of course, is the.
Well, the third is who, like, what we know who he was.
Yeah.
Was it throughout his whole life? Was like, I kind of
yeah,
didn't.
I think so, yeah.
I sort of purposely didn't dig into the details. Not because I didn't want to know, but because just what I knew was enough.
Right.
Like, I didn't need to be extra outraged because it's been going on for 50, 60 years. It just happened to one person.
That's enough.
Yeah, that's enough. I don't, knowing the whole backstory probably would make me more angry. I'm not saying that it wouldn't have an effect on me, but it's one.
Yeah, you're kind of like, yeah, as pissed off as you need to be at this point. I think what's interesting about a guy like that is when you hear really bad stuff about that somebody's been doing and they're kind of a dick anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of go, wow, all right, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, what a jerk. Or that person was always kind of weird.
Right.
Or whatever, right? But when it's somebody who's, it made me kind of realize how you just never know.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what that front is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, anybody who is portrayed in such a positive way could certainly be a monster in the background.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
Well, yeah, you never know. And that's also, I think, growing up in New York where you just kind of run into famous people all the time, you just, you know, doing normal things, just like going to the store or whatever, playing with their kids in Central Park. I don't have as much reverence for famous people as, I don't want to say the average person, but I think that's just a New Yorker thing in general.
You're right.
It's just like, oh yeah, this is another random person. So like the fall from grace wasn't as hard on me, even though I am African American. But
well, topic number four. Tacos.
Oh, tacos.
Are they in every corner yet?
Can I tell you about these tacos that I had when I was down in Austin?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Valentina's. Best place in Austin. It's a taco truck at the side of the road. And it's called the Real Deal Holyfield. And it's got, if you're a meat eater, it's great. If you're not a meat eater, you wouldn't eat this. But it's a breakfast taco. And you have eggs, beans, bacon, and brisket.
Ooh.
On
this hard
like,
shell amazing, or soft shell?
No, it's soft. Like everything, most of the stuff was soft, like corn tortillas. So good.
Mm.
So good.
Thick corn tortilla?
Thick.
That does sound pretty good.
So delicious. But tacos is another thing, just like hummus.
I totally remember when tacos got hot.
Around
the mid-80s.
Oh, my God.
Now, again, maybe because my perspective is so limited, maybe the town I lived in was just so backwards. Now, obviously, in New York City, tacos have been around since, you know, whatever. Since New York's been a thing.
Yes.
But where I was from, it was sort of a trend that came about. It was sort of like, oh, tacos. And everybody, like I remember my aunt having taco night.
Yeah,
and it was like the biggest deal.
Yeah.
It was like, they'd make the little piles of all the stuff. And you know, as kids, you'd go get your little shells and go fill it in. I feel like it was, again, somewhere around the mid-80s.
Did this have anything to do with Taco Bell? When was Taco Bell...
Well, yeah, I think Taco Bell might have been founded somewhere around there.
Yeah.
We didn't have a Taco Bell ever and still don't.
That's good.
In that town.
But the commercials, I feel like...
The commercials would have probably had an impact on it. Yeah, for sure.
I think it's just... just going and recently being in a place, or even being close, I used to work in Kennett Square, and there are a lot of Mexican people. There's a huge Mexican culture there, and lots of restaurants where it's like authentic Mexican food.
Mm.
And it's totally different. Or even Tex-Mex when we were down in, you know, or even the Mexican, true Mexican food that's so close, you know, in Texas, that some people, especially up here, different parts of the country, have probably only interacted with like Ortega tacos, you know, or like ground beef, the taco, I don't make them like that, but like, that's not really that good. Like true tacos are amazing.
That's what my aunt made.
Right?
Yeah, don't offend my aunt.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Jason Zan. I didn't mean to offend you. I had a great interaction with one of my friends who was from Mexico City, Luis, one time. I was making fajitas, I think, and I had tortillas. And he was like, why aren't you warming them in the pan? I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, that's what we do. We warm them in the pan. He's like, what are you making anyway? And I was like, fajitas. He's like, what the hell is that? And I'm like, wait a minute, what? That's a, it's American construct. It's a fajitas.
Really? Fajitas are American construct?
Yes.
Whoa. I never knew that.
I didn't know.
Either. Wait, could they?
Or at least it's probably from, we've appropriated it in some way and made it into this delicious meal. But my friend Luis was like, no such thing.
Could it be Spanish?
Like, oh, maybe.
I don't know.
Possibly, yeah. People get Spain and
Mexico
mixed up, and who's Hispanic and who's Spanish? Anyway,
yeah.
Where are you at with tacos? I mean, are you a fan?
Dance? Oh yeah, I just I don't remember who, if I proposed this, maybe you did, Jason. But my thing, I love all the taco nights around town.
Oh, you can eat one every night.
You could pretty much eat a taco every night in Lancaster, and like on the cheap.
Yeah,
because, you know, they're so easy to make, and so easy, you know, people, usually it's at a bar, so you're probably going to get a beer or some sort of drink if you don't, imbibe. So cash cow for the folks around here, but also they're just really good. There isn't a place that I wouldn't eat a taco in Lancaster, which is saying something. I definitely prefer soft shell, though.
I'm a soft shell guy.
Yeah.
There's a thing called Taco Face. It bothers me.
What?
Taco face is when you pick up a hard shell taco and you tilt your head and you open your mouth real big and you squeeze down and break that shell and it all flies everywhere and people have that look. It's called taco face.
I've never heard of that.
And it bothers me. So I'd rather the soft shell, people do not get taco face and it does not bother me. I don't like to watch people eat hard shell tacos, so I like the soft shell. I do want to say though that my, I was in the Silicon Valley area visiting a friend about 10 years ago, and he was, I don't know how, embedded in this great Mexican community there that was all, you know, Spanish speaking and taquerias and things like that. And he took me there to have lunch, and it was like you're saying, the authentic stuff is just, I kind of feel
so
like
amazing.
Digs with hummus right now.
Right.
I mean, it was
it ruins everything else.
It was so great.
Yeah.
And, you know, no, like it was, I'll always remember.
Was there mole there?
Mole.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's a sauce. It's delicious.
We'll come back to
it. It probably was, but I don't remember. Topic number five, the NFL.
Oh.
Are you ready for some football?
Also, nothing I have a relationship with, other than being from outside of Philadelphia and supporting Philadelphia teams. I'll watch it every once in a while. And when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, aside from what happened in Philadelphia, what happened in my family household is we all cried and we were like, the Eagles won the Super Bowl. And that was about
Did you cry?
A little bit. You weep. Just like I weep. Just
tears
that, you know,
up.
If everybody else is crying, I felt like I had to cry, right?
But I feel like that win was so, being from New York where we always went, no, just kidding. But like, there's this culture of like hearing about the Yankees winning all the dang time. And then like hearing about the heydays of Broadway Joe for football. And it's, New York just expects to win, which is just ridiculous. So like for me, football never really held much sway over me as a sport, just because all you kept hearing was like, we used to win, why aren't we winning anymore? It was like the talk radio in New York. It's like, you know, then why do I care if you're just going to complain about it? I'll deal with baseball. That seemed to not be as much of a thing, even though I'm a Mets fan, which is totally going away from the NFL. I will say my immediate reaction to NFL, though, not to be Debbie Downer, but the whole concussion.
Bring it down.
I just, I worked on the sideline for my alma mater, Franklin and Marshall, which is Division III football. So not typically these aren't folks who are going to go to the NFL. But, you know, we took concussions very seriously. I was an equipment manager. If someone even, like, there was a hint of concussion, the athletic trainers would yank the helmet and bring it to me or my boss and say, this person's not going back in the game. And the fact that that took the NFL longer to figure out that they should probably, like, not send people back on the field. Like, come on, people. What are you doing?
There's definitely an issue. I'm not an expert. I'm not a sports fanatic. But there's definitely an issue over the years. I remember growing up in the Pittsburgh area in the 70s, of course. We were big into football. And I do enjoy watching the sport. I go to games once a year. I typically try to get to a Steeler game. But I'm certainly not fanatical about it. But as a league, as an organization, I feel like that there was a moment where Mike Webster, who was the center for the Steelers back in the 70s, he died a long, long time ago now, but he was like 50, 52 or something like that. And that really struck me because he was one of these guys that I grew up watching, right? And I was a fan of him. Mm-hmm. And it was these medical issues that he had from getting banged around.
Yep.
And that was the first one, I think, where I really started to pay attention to that kind of that thing, you know, around football. And the game has gotten just so much more aggressive and so much more violent. And it really is a problem. I don't know where it goes from here. I don't know how the league addresses it. I don't know if people are ever going to really care. You know, I kind of feel like the NFL is modern day gladiator kind of stuff, and it's sort of like who's going to really care?
I think at a certain point there's not going to be any more football players because parents are the next generation are like,
yeah,
that'll be interesting. What to see
are the
long
term you know caught? I mean, because like you said, these people are dying really, really young, and they're going through a lot.
Yeah,
and you know, you have your moment, you make your millions or whatever, but what are the long? Or some people don't even get that far. You know, they're in their 30s when they have to retire because of whatever. But parents now thinking about, you know, even talking to my husband about it. If we had a kid who wanted to play football, what would you say? They're huge. I mean, every sport has its risk. I mean, life has its risk, but that one, I mean, you're meant to hit each other.
Well, right.
That's part of the sport.
Hitting happens in rugby. Here's where I think actually things will go is that rugby will become more of a sport. Two things that I think will happen. Rugby will become more of a sport, and lacrosse will leave the East Coast or the coasts and become more of a mainstream sport because you can still be physical in lacrosse, but you can't take someone down.
Right.
You can't, like, the concussion risk is mitigated, but you can still, it's the same sort of athletic ability of being able to sprint.
The agility and the speed and that sort of thing.
Right. And having big guys that on defense and stuff like that.
I think rugby would happen first because I just think about soccer. Like, nobody really embraces soccer.
Well, it's funny how popular soccer is with kids and how popular it is
with adults.
Yeah.
I know.
And it's been like that for a long time. Yeah. So it's like the adults now played soccer.
The whole world is excited about soccer and we're like, nah, we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, NFL.
Because we don't want to have to call it football.
I feel like that this episode will be the first one we get a lot of hate mail from.
Probably.
I think we talked about a lot of interesting topics.
I also feel like that I'm learning that I grew up somewhere that sort of blossomed in the mid-80s. While we were watching Bill Cosby, somebody introduced Mexican food to us.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, by the way, you're watching Cosby tonight? Here's some tacos. Here's some tacos.
Enjoy Dr. Huxtable.
Thanks, Jocelyn. Always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on
Thank 5x5. Thank you so much.
The Candy Factory 5x5 podcast is recorded at the studios of The Candy Factory,
a co-working campus in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
The show is produced and hosted by Jason Mundock,
along with co-host Robert Diggs, regularly joining the Yakety Yakking.
The opinions and views expressed on this podcast
are solely those of the expressor.
The Candy Factory is not in any way responsible if anyone said something stupid.
Our theme music was composed
and recorded by a really cool guy.
Really cool guy.
A really cool guy.
Really cool guy named John Chin.
Relevant links and show notes
can be found on the show post
at the Candy Factory website.
CoworkingInLancaster.com.
Maybe that's it.
Is that it? Okay.